Hello, and welcome to the Television Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be having a spoiler-filled discussion about a television show that we think you'll enjoy. In this episode, I am joined by my sister Kay, and we're going to have a spoiler-filled discussion on the first season of Umbrella Academy, which was a Netflix show that ran for the first season 10 episodes, most of which were about an hour long.
Mm-hmm. Good hours.
Yeah, fairly full hours. And James and I reviewed the miniseries this was based on. The history of the publication was a six-issue miniseries back in... I want to say 2007, a second miniseries about a year later, and then a third miniseries about a decade later, which was just a few years ago now, around the time the show was happening. The show has had a first season. They've released a second season. There's a third in the works. And we watched this over the course of three nights, over the course of about a week.
Yeah, a little over, yeah.
Yeah. And there was enough of a break because we do it, we get together Wednesday, Fridays for dinner and TV and stuff. So a Wednesday, a Friday, and the following Wednesday when we finished it off tonight. And there was just enough of a gap there. It's like, where did we leave off again?
Well, the show had some subtle inconsistencies, like when Five went missing 16 years ago, I guess. Mm-hmm. All the others had names at that point. So presumably he also had a name?
I was unclear when they got their names of Luther, Diego, etc.
Mom had already given them names by that point, and he knew those names.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was just little things like that. I was getting tripped up constantly on how high should I be counting? Should I be looking for five siblings? Should I be looking for six? Should I be looking for seven?
I had a similar problem when I was reading the comic because... And James and I had talked about this. You've got the numbers, you've got the first names, Luther, Diego, Klaus, etc., and then you've got the code names.
Mm. We were spared the code names.
We got them a little bit here with Space Boy.
Oh, okay.
But really, I don't think we got any of the others. And in the comic, not all of them got all three.
Mm.
So I was always, it's like, is Ben four or six? And I know we got told once or twice, but I could never... get it straight in my mind at times.
I had problems lining up number with character name, but also, like, there were the portraits.
Mm-hmm.
So Vanya was never in the portraits. So it was there are seven siblings, but there are either six or five people in five kids in the portraits.
Because we lost Ben at one point, and
right.
I guess they never did a portrait after Five left.
Seemingly. Well, there was one portrait, actually, with only four of them.
Okay.
And then we have the statue for Ben, but we never established how Ben died. What age he died at, nothing.
We know it was after the bank adventure. The reference of Allison's daughter wanting the Eiffel Tower story, that was the story of the first miniseries, first trade or whatever. And it's funny because this 10-issue or 10-episode arc was pretty much that first miniseries. Minus the Eiffel Tower adventure, because the way that one, the miniseries worked, is we get a little bit, like we started in the show, of, okay, these kids are born.
Mm-hmm.
Then it bounced forward about 10 years to the Eiffel Tower adventure for just a few pages, and then it bounced forward, you know, 20 years. And then a few issues later, it bounced back 15 years or something like that. So it's like figuring out where everything fit in the timeline got a little confusing.
Yeah.
I always kind of hate that because to me, it's like they're trying to hide aspects of an otherwise not so strong story.
Well, for me, it's a question of that, or did you just not know yet? It's kind of a when in the writing process did you decide that that event 15 years ago happened?
And I'll give leeway for ongoing narratives that go for a few seasons or many, many years or decades even in the comics, that's totally going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Can't know everything up front. For a six-issue miniseries?
Exactly.
Can't really give that.
Well, we watched something recently, and I asked you around, it was like episode four, do you think back at episode one, they knew this was going to happen? Because this kind of feels contradictory. to something in episode one. And that's the really hard thing in writing a TV show.
Well, and also with a TV series, I think you've got to give a little bit more allowance or flexibility on that first episode. Because often that's that pilot to sell everything.
With the one of the famous misconceptions about shows, there is a continuity person on set. Mm-hmm. The script continuity person, though, is only doing continuity within the current script.
Well, and it's for things like, okay, we're reshooting this scene from another angle. You were sitting in that chair. The coffee was this full or whatever.
Yeah, this is where the prop was. This is what the wardrobe should be.
It's visual continuity.
Right. And, well, and a great example of that is one infamous night on a show I worked, we filmed for over half an hour, and then there was a, oh, curse words. How did nobody back at base camp from wardrobe department, on set from wardrobe department, the script continuity person, how did nobody notice one of the actors came to set in the wrong wardrobe?
That, I can definitely understand that. And we've all seen TV shows or movies even, whereas we're cutting back and forth between scenes or shots in a single scene, somebody's cup goes from full to empty to full to empty or whatever, mm-hmm. or their collar keeps flipping around or some other thing like that. And that's just the mechanism of producing a live action thing.
Well, and because I'm so aware that they're doing continuity within an episode, and that's the focus, I watched most of a season of another show recently, and within a 3-episode period, in that first episode and the third episode, the same character used the same, I learned this piece of advice, and attributed it to different people and having learned it at vastly different points in life.
Yeah.
The first one was, I just read a book on leadership last week. And then 2 episodes later, it was, my father taught me when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's certainly aspects where I think if somebody is creating a story, they don't know everything. They may not have planned everything out. And even if they had, they get halfway through and they realize it's not going to work. It's going to change plan, whatever.
Well, and my favorite comment from writers is when they say, I had a plan and the character told me differently. Mm-hmm. And I can see that.
Well, I think it was Harlan Ellison who did this thing a time or two where he would sit down in a public venue at his typewriter, write a story, and as each page was done, it was getting taped up on the wall.
Mm.
And it's kind of a no backsies. It's up there. He's got to keep going.
Yeah, which is hard.
And that's a crazy kind of storytelling.
Well, I asked you that first night we were watching, so within the first 3 or 4 episodes, if Vanya had a power and just didn't know it.
Well, and I was trying not to give anything away, because in the comic, it was similar to how it turned out here, where she had a power, but to me it was unclear if she had always had it, because in the first issue of the comic, there is somebody, I forget his name, the conductor or something like that, who's like the conductor of the orchestra she's in, but it's an orchestra of evil.
Oh, gosh.
Who's recruiting her and then subjects her to experimentation.
Mm.
So another argument is the experimentation granted her powers.
I liked this because I felt they played fair in terms of from early on, I'm like, that's not how you take anxiety meds.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you were taking a medication to suppress something.
Yeah. Well, the whole conductor type, that character is kind of sort of what they did with the boyfriend.
I thought, well, I kind of liked how they wrote him. He almost went into I love to hate him territory. I'd say for the first half of the 10 episodes, I loved to hate him because he was too good to be true. It was obvious he had an agenda. It was obvious he was going to turn out to be manipulative. Mm-hmm. But the second half of the episodes, he was evil genius. He might as well have been twirling his mustache at times.
There came a point where it's like, okay, I'm done with him. I hit a point where I stopped enjoying watching him.
He was mentally unstable after a while.
Yeah.
And it was kind of a, how'd he pull off the first 5 episodes if the second half of the season is accurate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and admittedly, we weren't seeing a lot of him up front, but, and it goes into the, they did a very good job of he's too good to be true, and going back to the siblings stuff, they played the sisters quite well.
The sibling dynamic on the show worked way better for me than it did in the comic. Now, part of that is 6 20-page issues.
Mm. It's hard to capture.
You just don't have much room, and you've got to set the whole world up, etc. And if you go with an hour of television being roughly 60 script pages, and as I told James and I'll tell you, I'm not trying to equate a script page with a comic book page. They're not the same. But just using a page as a metric.
Yeah, and a page a minute for TV, yeah, give or take. Yeah, I see what you're saying.
The miniseries is maybe 2 episodes versus 10.
Yeah.
So they had way more time here. And I think live action always has the advantage of the nuances in the performance of the actors.
The very best example I will give of that, and I wish I could think of the actor's name, from the TV show Judging Amy. The actor went on early in the reboot of Hawaii Five-0. He played the governor. Richard T. Jones.
Mm-hmm.
And I swear, on Judging Amy, when he was first in the episodes, he was like this off-on-the-side character that they probably thought was going to recur. But he did the reaction shots so well. Not a single word of dialogue, but just that, you're saying what? Look.
Well, you know what the most famous example of that is?
Hmm.
Henry Winkler.
Well, yes. Yes, definitely.
When he did the bit at the, you know, pulling out the comb, looks in the mirror, oh, I don't need to change anything.
Yes.
That's what got him, because he was supposed to be just kind of a walk-on, walk-off kind of a thing.
Yeah. Well, and the fact that he did it with the, because he wasn't supposed to say a word, mm-hmm, of dialogue.
Yeah, couldn't do dialogue, but a sound.
Yes, that has always amused me.
That's the kind of thing that, again, when you've got the actor giving the portrayal, it can either really help or really hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a much better sense of Klaus, mm, here, you know, his flamboyantness, etc. Certainly Five here, I thought, played well.
I felt they did well with Klaus sending him back to Vietnam, and I'm glad they showed us some Vietnam.
And that wasn't in the comic, or at least not that I recall, and granted, I'd only read it. I recorded with James a week ago when we're recording this, and had read it that Monday. So it's been a week and a half.
Yeah.
But for me, the problem with the comic was the art style was a little, it wasn't abstract, but it was a little abstract. And it was done such that it felt far away, like there was a lot of long shots and the characters weren't fully rendered and stuff. So it's almost like watching a behind the scenes of a filming, mm, of a show versus the filming of the show. So I really couldn't tell you how accurately they captured the likeness of like Allison and so forth. And I'm not thinking they even tried. Although Space Boy, they kind of got Luther. But the characters, particularly at the beginning when they're all school age, are all identically dressed. They've got the domino. So the hairstyle is the only difference.
Yeah. Well, there was an aspect at times where I kind of felt like they were trying to do the Vanya is Eastern Europe representative. Allison was pulled from Africa. Diego was pulled from
kind
South
of the
America.
Mini UN.
Kind of the one from every continent, if you, yeah, will. And I wondered if we would go anywhere with that. We didn't, but I just wondered if that was a conscious decision. We never touched on curiosity about the others.
No, and that bothered me in the comic because it made a big deal of there were 43 of them born. He got 7. Not all survived. But it felt like there would be another group of these waiting in the wings to either come in as the next Umbrella Academy or to fight them or whatever.
Well, and they came so close to doing something I wanted, which is in that, not the very opening shot, but near the opening sequence, we have the basically 7 nannies rolling the, mm-hmm, 7 prams. And then when we get to the point where number 7 is basically killing off nannies, I kind of wanted nanny number 1 to have a number 1 honors, kind of a, but start with 7. And it's She killed off her own nanny, so Six is stepping in to help with her.
Oh, yeah.
She kills off Six. So, and half her
kind of the countdown of we're running out of nannies.
And that's how they get to Grace, is kind of a she killed off all the originals.
It would have been nice to have at least seen a lab or something to get set up Grace.
Yes. Well, and even when they did at the end the long ago for where he came from. Hargraves. I didn't feel they established well really where he came from.
In the comic, they say he's an alien.
They strongly implied it here.
Yeah, and I didn't feel that worked particularly well. They also, in the comic, established he was an Olympic medalist at something or other, I thought. A genius who had invented a levitator, which was like a belt the kids used to kind of float and whatnot. The televator, which was like a teleporting elevator, which is, again, a good way to get people around the world.
So yeah.
If you want to have an Eiffel Tower adventure, you can get to the Eiffel Tower.
Yeah.
None of that was here. And they also established him as having been, having done something with monkeys and such, explaining both Pogo and what happened to Luthor.
Pogo was in only one of the childhood scenes that I can think of. And that was near the end.
Yeah. Pogo was interesting. Visually, he was really well done. I think
he was.
The voice actor did terrific.
Yeah.
The animation for what had to be a CG character was brilliant.
I think Pogo needs his own backstory in terms of presented.
Well, how did he become sentient, talking, etc.? How long has he been with the family?
Mm-hmm.
What prompted all of that? There were a lot of unanswered questions in the comic. Here, they had... I've got to imagine somebody said, hey, let's do this. They assemble a writing room, and the first thing that your writers ought to have done before meeting in the writer's room, read the six issues.
Yeah.
And in my opinion, if somebody came in saying, yeah, I didn't do it, it's like, you know, you're fired, because I was able to do it easily in an hour or two prepping for the podcast. But you've got the advantage of being able to say, and that's just to read it. Granted, yeah. If you're going to do a series, you should read it, take notes, have some ideas, and spend more than just an hour or two.
I know you have a thought you want to get out, but I'm suddenly curious. Do you feel that they did kind of a, not scene by scene, but kind of a draw as directly as possible from, or do you feel they did kind of like that Korean leverage show, where it's take the best elements and configure them to serve our purposes?
I think a little of both, a little of neither. I think they went in saying, okay, what worked, what didn't, what can we do, what shouldn't we do? Because there were a number of scenes where they were in the comic but played out very differently in the show.
Once or twice you commented that scene was different characters in the comic.
The scene at the diner when number 5 is there with the plumber or whatever,
The tow truck driver the donut place.
At the donut place, yeah. And the place gets shot up by Hazel and Cha-Cha. In the comic, he was there, number 5 was there, with Pogo. And you remember the guys who came in at the bowling alley later?
Mm-hmm.
Those sorts of blatantly costume types.
Yeah.
Except they were even more over the top, almost, you know...
So the show kept it more real world.
Much more.
The show intrigued me time frame wise in terms of it was clearly saying 1993. It was clearly saying basically today, but we weren't seeing the cell phones.
No, it's like technology had stopped in the 70s or 80s.
Yeah.
No flat screens. Everything was big CRTs. There was still future science in there, but in a... almost 50s, 60s sci-fi approach. Again, the pneumatic tubes to send messages across time.
Yeah.
You know, it was...
Well, the pneumatic tubes that magically appeared, like, in the shower wall.
Yeah.
In the mini fridge, in the hotel room, in the ice machine. I mean, it was kind of a... They appear where they need to be and disappear where they don't need to be.
It was puzzling for me how they were in a couple of those places. Not quite as puzzling as when Hazel puts the briefcase with the time travel device in the vent, and later Klaus crawls through the vent quite a ways And it's like, this is in a motel.
Yeah.
Where was that vent going, and how could it go for 6 feet?
I assumed he was crawling into the next room, but I agree with the 6 feet. It didn't make sense.
There shouldn't have been enough space between rooms to fit a briefcase that's maybe a foot across.
I agree.
So there are aspects like that. You got to roll with it.
I actually found Hazel to be a surprisingly interesting character.
He was, and that whole plot with him and Agnes, and Cha-Cha, I could see where they were replacing aspects from the comic, but that whole arc and stuff was not in the first miniseries.
Well, the moment that he started kind of connecting with Agnes, and it's funny, Agnes reminded me of like a mix between Cloris Leachman and Florence Henderson. Kind of that she reminds you of a lot of the character actors you've seen. And well, just,
out of a 70s sitcom.
Yeah, yeah. You know, and the moment he started kind of building that bond with her, I don't like donuts, but I come for your donuts type thing. I'm like, He's building a bond to this time frame, and that's either good or bad, depending on your perspective.
Well, and where they leave off, we could see those two characters in a second season.
Yeah. Well, and I liked when he came back to the house with the gun drawn and kind of a, oh, sorry, that's habit, and had the conversation with number five.
Mm-hmm. I mean, he was a good character and such, and I can definitely see where they took the original miniseries and said, okay, how do we want to do this? How long do we want to, how many episodes and stuff like that? What do we want to do verbatim? What do we want to change up? Because there were a couple of conversations where they'd happen between different characters, you know, because I forget who Five first told the apocalypse is coming and stuff. And it was it Klaus or Luthor? It was Luthor.
Vanya.
It was You're right. It was Vanya. And it played out totally different in the comic because kind of that discussion they had later on as a family meeting of the apocalypse is coming happened early on.
Mm.
But part of it is I found aspects of the comic, frankly, a bit forgettable.
Mm.
And it was a bit more memorable in the show. I enjoyed both, but if the comic had come out today, I don't know that I would have necessarily stuck with it. 6 issues, I would have pre-ordered the first, probably, well, in for a penny, in for a pound, maybe. But wouldn't have felt obligated to. Probably would not have continued with the second miniseries. 10 years ago, I was all in on a ton, so yeah, I got all of it, and it was fine. But I liked the show better than the comic. And there were a couple of things where the show got very stylized visually.
Mm.
We had a couple of dance numbers, essentially. The one at the beginning of the show, where we then kind of pull out as if it's a cutaway of the building.
To show us where various places are in the house.
Yeah, and I still don't have a good sense of where things are in the house, but it was a very interesting visual.
Well, and it's funny, because the moment the camera started pulling back on Vanya, I'm like, we're about to see the house like a dollhouse. And you're looking at me like, what are you saying? And then they pull all the way out, and you're like, oh, that's what you meant.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, how did you know? And I'm like, something about the way the camera was pulling back, and they'd been making such a point of showing us each person in a separate room.
Yeah, but shot in kind of the same.
Yeah.
And it was one of those, they're all dancing and stuff, and it was just so odd.
Well, they were all in isolation, if you will, yet doing the same thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And it seemed to be that that was something that they wanted us to understand going into the series. It's not that they have nothing in common. It's that they go about the same thing on their own, and they need to figure out how to come together.
They don't always realize they're on parallel paths.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. In the comic, there was a lot of things that was very over the top.
Mm.
Such as they have the adventure at the Eiffel Tower, ending up going up against a zombie robot, Gustav Eiffel, or whatever. And the Eiffel Tower turns out to be a spaceship, so it shoots off into space. For it to crash and destroy the the Umbrella Academy manor in the finale.
That's fine.
So when we were getting it toasted here by Vanya, I'm like, yeah, I didn't think it was going to survive. So again, they hit the same notes in different ways between mm-hmm. the two. And I think if the comic had had the storytelling space that this show had, one, I definitely probably would not have stuck with it. It would have been it would have felt too slow on the page.
Oh, I can see that. Yeah.
But it could have realized the characters as well as it did.
Yeah, because this did a really good job of making all the characters unique
mm-hmm.
and very three-dimensional.
Yeah, but one of the main plot points here of time travel was kind of mentioned in passing in the miniseries.
Mm.
Five had been to the future, he came back, there's an apocalypse coming. That's it. Nothing with control, nothing with or whatever they called it and stuff.
Yeah, the handler. The commission.
Yeah, the commission, that's what it was.
Well, one of the things I was amazed how much I enjoyed was the day that wasn't.
That worked reasonably well. I'm never a fan of episodes that undo themselves.
And I'll agree with that, but at the end of that episode, you and I paused and before the next one, and it's, okay, what from this episode mattered?
Mm-hmm.
What needed to happen that now may or may not happen, may happen at a different time? And it gave us so much to think about.
Yeah.
And in that respect, because they went to the day that was from the day that wasn't, and you could just see kind of a, you know, two paths diverged in the wood.
Doing them as back-to-back episodes was a smart move. If that had been something that somehow they had, you know, spaced out a little.
Yeah.
That would have bothered me.
Well, Vanya discovering the journal in the day that wasn't made a huge difference, or would have, versus Vanya not discovering the journal until, what, 3 episodes later?
Yeah, the problem I had is when she discovered it on the day that wasn't, it was like at the tail end of it.
Mm.
So there was no ramifications of discovering it.
Well, yeah, she purely got the shock value. She didn't have time for the confrontation.
Yeah.
And looking back on it, the body I had mistaken in the attic for Leonard / what, Harold, his father, that was actually Helen Cho. Took me forever to realize that.
Was it?
Yeah.
I thought it was just whoever's house it was. Just like at the lake house, it was some guy whose house apparently it was.
No, that was the guy he paid to have the fight that he took from the hospital.
Oh, that was lost on me.
And that's when I finally clued in that was Helen Cho that we saw briefly in the attic. But why
it was the first chair that Vanya replaces.
Right. But why Cho wasn't in the attic when the siblings went in the attic, I don't know.
When we saw tonight in the first of the 3 episodes we watched tonight, the poster for Helen Cho of Have You Seen Her or whatever, it's like, I remember the character. Which one was she again?
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot to kind of have to hang on to.
Yeah.
Which is good. You know, it's a fairly realized world in that respect.
I liked that the first time we saw Vanya's powers, it was positive.
Yes.
Because that right there shows that her powers don't have to be destructive, don't mm-hmm. have to be negative. And it goes back into the, because Hargreaves was so focused on teaching them to fight crime and, I almost want to say, weaponizing their powers.
And I never understood why.
There's a whole backstory there, too, that we didn't get, going back to the, he knew the apocalypse was going to happen. He knew this week was going to happen.
The question was, did he know that because of what had happened with Vanya, and therefore he knew at some point she was going to cause an apocalypse? Or was he always bringing this stuff together because he either had advanced knowledge or there was this crime wave to fight? I never understood his motivation.
But they asked the question, why did he kill himself now to bring everyone together? How did he choose now as the time? The exact time that Leonard / Harold happens to come into Vanya's life.
Well.
And we may have gotten a hint in the final moments.
What do you
think?
Five
takes them through time.
I was going to say the reason the events happen when they did is because Reginald dies. His death brings everybody together. It gets Klaus there to get the book outside of the place for the other guy to go find.
but Laird happens to be outside to find it. He had no control of Laird being outside to find it.
Yeah, I don't know.
So either it's his alienness, which we have no understanding of.
Well, and one of the theories I put out to James on the comic on that is we never understand why these kids are born.
Mm.
Could it be something with him being an alien? Because I think there's another story to be had of, okay, there are these ladies who wake up one day not pregnant, give birth that day. Something's up. Let's gather the kids and then do a follow the kids at that point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they start having powers and stuff like not just let's jump 10, 20 years later.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think there were a lot of aspects of what was considered the premise of this that I felt were more interesting to explore than some of at least what they did in the comic.
I felt they waited too long to give us any hints that Grace slash Mom wasn't just a normal human.
That was a character that visually looked very different in the comic.
And that would have made a difference.
Oh, yeah. She actually resembled more like Dolores.
Mm.
You know, like a mannequin that's
yeah
used for a robot type thing versus what looks like a human.
Mm-hmm.
And again, when we get her origin, it's just not there, not there. Boom, she's there.
Yeah. Well, and it made me question if the previous ones had been robots and they just got broken beyond repair when Seven lashed out, which is why I had wished they'd done the nanny countdown.
Yeah, I took it as they were not.
I took it that way too, but I just didn't.
But it's unclear.
There was no blood. There was no clarification.
Yeah, and there were a couple of places there was a fair amount of blood.
Yes.
So we finally started to get some payoff on Ben, the dead sibling, being around.
That's what I was just thinking.
I was surprised we never got the cop who died. She never was seen again.
Yeah, Patch never had a chat with Klaus.
And Klaus's powers really in the hotel room really came when we get everybody, you know, all the dead victims and stuff there. That was a good scene.
Sobriety sucks for that poor boy.
Yeah.
I mean, he went through some serious withdrawal into sobriety, and that was hard on him.
Well, he was referred to as Seance in the comics.
Oh, I can see that.
Which is a good name, but to me, it's a talk to not get haunted by.
Yes, yes.
Sort of thing. And the character was, in my opinion, forgettable in the comic.
Well, and they had this some interesting dialogue about the, I thought basically you couldn't conjure them. And it's like, well, yeah, unless I'm sober. Kind of the, when I'm sober, I can pick and choose who I talk to.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, that's interesting.
Given the kid's upbringing, getting locked in a mausoleum and stuff, yeah. I can see where it was pretty traumatic.
So there's this thing that occasionally goes around social media that's basically a, for lack of a better expression, give the worst possible description of a movie, a TV show, etc. And I have to say, for this one, it would basically be the most dysfunctional group home foster care situation.
Foster care by a mad scientist.
Yeah. Foster care group home led by mad scientist.
Well, it's funny because, and again, I mentioned this with James, you know, as to why I'd originally gotten the comic. There's a couple of high-level descriptions you could give on this. And there's one of, you know, eccentric mentor figure, kids with superpowers. And it starts sounding kind of like, you know, school for kids with superpowers, like the X-Men.
Yes. Yes.
You know, you can go a little bit differently, and it starts to sound kind of like the Doom Patrol, where they're, okay, they're maybe a little messed up powers, and they're all a little messed up, but they're still, you know, heroic or whatever. And again, I don't know that either of those is an apt description for this.
Well, it's kind of a, instead of taking in one ward, Batman takes in seven.
I didn't take Hargreaves as the Batman type, but I get what you're saying. It was interesting show. It took a while for Vanya to be identified as kind of the big threat, whereas it was telegraphed in the comic.
I'd say over half. But I really do feel they played fair on the she's more than she seems.
Mm-hmm.
And she's had drilled into her head that she's the only ordinary one in an extraordinary family. And that may not be true.
Yeah.
And it's funny because from the start, I thought her music was what made her extraordinary.
That was one of the other things I don't think they really established particularly well with Allison. Is she really a good actress?
No, they didn't establish that at all.
Is it just a rumor?
Yeah.
You know, she's famous, but we never really get to understand the nature of that fame.
Yeah.
So, but missed with, opportunities.
But with Allison, they did a very good subplot of basically with a power like hers, it's easy to accidentally abuse it.
Yeah. Because hers is essentially the Simon Says sort of power.
Yeah.
You know, why the, you know, I heard a rumor is kind of the trigger phrase or whatever. I don't understand.
They needed some phrase so that she could limit. So not everything she said.
Well, yeah. So she could have regular conversations.
Yeah. And I'm sure in a comic, because I mean, in a TV show, you can do the sound waves effect that they were showing us. But in a comic book, having a phrase that you know every time I see this.
Often what they do is either color the word balloon or give it different color text or italics. There's a couple of different ways when somebody has that magic voice.
Yeah.
You know, I forget exactly how they did it in this particular case. Because it was a similar thing with the Purple Man in Jessica Jones.
Mm-hmm.
So.
I didn't think he ever talked normally. Just saying.
Overall, this was good. The lengthier episodes, I think, helped it. But it did feel long, dense. You know what I mean? Not in a bad way.
It felt heavy. Definitely.
Yeah, you're not going to mistake it for a light, airy, you know, network TV kind of a show.
Mm-hmm.
Which is good and stuff. I think Netflix does well with these sorts of things. I think they also did well making sure each episode had enough of a beginning, middle, and end that it didn't feel like, crap, I gotta watch all 10 of them in one sitting.
Well, it did well with just the struggles siblings face, the miscommunications, the jealousies of kind of place in the family, that kind of stuff. It handled it well.
Well, and they lacked a birth order. Mm-hmm. So having the number one, number two sort of favoritism or what have you was interesting.
Well, and the fact that those seemed to have been assigned upon pickup and never changed, which I thought was interesting. I mean, can you imagine if basically every year on birthday for, what they didn't call it birthday, but anyways, the day they celebrated all of them, it's kind of a, so I've renumbered you based on.
Yeah, pick a number out of a hat. Who's number one this year?
Oh, no, I think it would have been Hargreaves saying, based on your test scores this year.
You've been promoted or demoted.
Yes.
That's funny.
I'm just saying.
Definitely a couple of ways you could go with that. I could see going with the Batman having, you know, multiple kids or whatever, doing it that way. We're on a you know, every few week basis, you know, and really build up the competition aspect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'd even give the choice bedroom to number one.
Of course, the twist on that sort of a thing would be that the way you game the system is to all work in tandem.
Yes.
And, you know, build the team he's looking for versus, you know, the solo rock star approach.
One of the things I really wished that they had taken the time to explore was kind of when Vanya was being isolated, when she was always with Hargreaves, when the missions were going on, etc. I wished they had shown, instead of that being pure isolation and punishment, shown that he was trying to teach her focus, control, big picture looking, things that he felt when she did come into her power.
She would need to rein it in. Yeah, I'm also curious how this season would play out in chronological order.
Mm.
I.e. if we'd gotten all the kids' scenes at once.
Yeah.
And then kind of bounced forward. So I liked it, but there were a couple of things of why did this happen? Why was Luther sent to the moon? What happened here? You know?
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't read the second miniseries since it came out a decade ago. Granted, based on my rereading of the first one, even a week back, you know, doesn't hold up well.
But I will say, in terms of why was Luther sent to the moon, first of all, when the moon got hit at the end, I really wanted it to be his trailer that kaboomed up on the moon.
Missed opportunity there, absolutely. Of course, we never got an explanation of how he got up there and back.
No, but we'll SpaceX that one. You know, private whatever. But the other thing is, I wanted him to basically see the moon coming apart and have kind of an epiphany of maybe those reports I was doing do have something useful in them.
Or at least be curious where the moon got hit to know if his stuff was still up there. There's half a dozen ways they could have had a good moment on that.
Yeah.
Versus guys, you know, and then they're talking for a while. I mean, they escaped destruction barely.
If they were doing the modern technology version, which we've already established they weren't, and product placement, which they didn't. But if he had just whipped out the smartphone and pulled up the Ring doorbell system.
That would have been hilarious.
On his trailer.
Let me check. Yeah. Or if the way they found out about the moon is he'd gotten the alert if there's been a disturbance at your house.
Yes.
That would have been funny. Yeah. Well, I'm guessing the next season takes place in a different time frame.
Yes.
Because ain't much left of this one.
And we don't know how old they'll be.
I did like how when they were kind of five was bouncing them through time and we were there at the end, they do the camera circling around and on the second pass, they're now back as the kids.
Yeah.
That was good. I'm assuming they're going to be adult, but it'd be interesting if they flipped it and did the kids versions.
But what if they're adult, say, 8 years ago? Luther isn't apified.
Interesting. Couple of ways they could go. Couple of ways. I think they're still going to be the adult ones just because we've spent so much time with those actors.
Yeah, me too.
It's too much of a risk, I think, to flip that around. Are you interested in watching the second season?
I am, actually. Yeah, okay. I'm curious.
We've got a few other things to watch between now and then, of course, and I will try to time that like I did here, where I can read the comic, review that, probably with James, and then we'll watch the season. I'm enough ahead on the back issue spotlights that it gives me the ability for us to spend a week and a half, you know, watching a TV show and get that episode up the same week as the corresponding back issue spotlight. Whereas if I was doing them, you know, on the one, you know, on an as needed basis kind of a thing, we just wouldn't be able to do.
Yeah.
So again, it was interesting stuff. I can definitely see where they drew inspiration from, where they made some tweaks, some enhancements, and just some changes.
Yeah.
But overall, it was good, and I'm curious about a second season.
Me too.
Cool.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.